to the Wicked.
Welcome to the Wicked Wednesdays podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the first episode of Wicked Wednesdays podcast. I'm Alan. Joining me is my co-host Shelly.
Sup?
You know me from the Horrorcopia podcast. I've been doing it for about 5 years now, and from years of calling into the Padded Room podcast and writing into the Horror for Dummies podcast is Alan Cha-Cha. I want to give a huge shout out to Darian Brock. Thank him for putting us on the Padded Room Network. I'm super pumped for this show.
And I'm Alan's co-host and fiance, Shelly. I've been on Horrorcopia for about 2.5 years as like a random podcast. You know, whatevers. I usually end up just making fun of Alan.
That you do.
This podcast is mainly going to be about true crime, the occult,
paranormal.
Yeah, paranormal stuff. Just anything really that is out there and
the wicked shit.
Yeah, that's the wicked shit. So, Alan, what have you been up to?
Same old, you know, going to work, hanging out with you. Watching wrestling, I was really happy tonight. DX got back together.
That was the funniest thing ever. When you were sitting there with your, like, hands clasped together like a little kid, and you were grinning, and it looked like you were fixing to pee your pants, and then when you yelled out, "Suck it," I thought I was going to die.
The only thing that would have got a pop out of me bigger than that was if I'd heard the glass break and Stone Cold came down to wrestle.
I literally was checking to see if you popped a boner. I'm not even going to lie.
No, I had not. You know, it ain't like that.
Whatever.
Anyway, guess to get into a little bit of true crime already. You know, Bill Cosby's been locked up almost 2 weeks now. He tried pudding for the first time, and he did not like it. He said, "I promoted this garbage. This tastes like something you'd feed a lizard." And today he got hit in the face with a chicken patty. Apparently. But apparently some of the inmates are respecting him and calling him the OG.
I don't even know what to say to that.
I don't either, but it's just weird. Dr. Huxtable is in prison now.
Since this is our first podcast, things are going to be a little bit different this time because, you know, we're working some kinks out, trying to figure out how everything goes. Instead of doing, like, one big story, which is basically how we kind of want to run this, we're just going to be talking about some things that we've seen on the internet, stories that we've heard, you know, just get a general idea of, you know, how this is going to work out. So, Alan, you got anything else?
Yeah, former manager of the DOD Aerospace Threat Program, Louis Izondo, maybe how his name's said, came out and said UFOs are real. I wonder, you know, does he mean they're aliens, or it's just unidentified flying objects? We don't know what they are, because everything until you know what it is an unidentified flying object.
Well, isn't it like he's on like some sort of panel that they're coming up with, and they're supposed to release some information?
Yeah, he's working with Tom DeLong. You know who that is?
Yes. He's a nutbag.
Okay, so what do you think of this?
Well, I mean, they basically asked him, is any of it, like, harmful? And he's like, not yet. But they haven't, like, said, like, what evidence they have. So until I actually see some evidence or some proof, I'm not paying any attention to it.
Okay.
Anything else?
Did you hear about the guy in Oregon, I believe it was, that set up, like, Indiana Jones traps for the cops?
Yes, that was great.
He had a hot tub set up like the boulder to roll at them. That's funny, but some of them he had were actually deadly, like mouse traps rigged to shotgun shells and stuff.
Yeah.
And when the cops arrested him, they asked him if there were any more traps he should be worried about, and he said, "Well, I wouldn't go running into the property all willy-nilly."
All willy-nilly.
Yeah.
All right. So the one story that we're going to try and focus on tonight is from 1988, and it kind of goes back to, and it reminds me a lot of the people that I've done podcasts with and that I've met through Alan, and a lot of people that I grew up with. There was a guy named Mark Branch who decided that, well, let me back up. In October 24th of 1988, a girl by the name of Shannon Gregory was found dead by her twin sister, Cheryl Gregory. Immediately, the sister told them that the person who did it was Mark Branch. I did a lot of investigating on this because the stuff that you find, like a Ranker and all that kind of stuff about it, it makes it seem like there was no evidence against this kid, and that they just picked on him solely for the fact that he had mental issues and he was really into like horror movies, and specifically Friday the 13th.
One of the articles I read said he actually dressed like Jason to commit the murders. Is there any truth
to
that?
No, that's absolutely false.
Okay. And somebody else, the video clerk he rented movies from, said he was really into gore.
Yeah, they did. That was when they interviewed him. They said that the only thing that he would rent was gore, and the gorier the better. Basically, the evidence I have against him was there was a neighbor who saw him pull up at their house.
The Gregory's house?
Yeah, okay. Saw Branch pull up at the Gregory's house. He had a pretty distinct gray Chevy Chevette. And he saw him go in and then come back out within a few minutes and leave. And, of course, he had on acid wash jean jacket and jeans. He wasn't wearing a mask or anything crazy like that.
Because the article I read said he was in, like, fatigues and in a hockey mask.
No.
That was only one article.
Yeah, that's crap. He went in, and the guy saw him come back out and get in his car and leave. They did find the car the next day. And they said that there was blood on the brake pedal and the gas pedal, on the gear shifter, on the steering wheel, and in the seat of the driver's side.
Did you read the article where they were looking for him in the woods, and they found an abandoned slaughterhouse that had drawings of Jason and things in there?
No, that's not in any of the... I read the affidavit that the police gave to get the warrants and stuff to search his house and to search some other stuff. And this is before they found his body.
They found like a month later.
Yeah, and here's the thing. We're kind of going all over the place here because me and you both have read it. But let me explain what else happened with this. When the sister told the police department immediately that there was this guy that she thought that it was him, they immediately started looking for him. They didn't have any other suspects. They didn't talk to, they didn't, you know, question anybody else in the sense of they were a suspect. It was this guy. I'm just perusing through here because I want to give, you know, the right information. She was stabbed in the back and in the head, and her throat was slit. Her sister found... The neighbor saw, you know, Mark Branch's car around 12 o'clock. Before that, he had been with a friend of his named Scott Landry. And they had been together all day. Scott had gone and picked up Mark around 8 o'clock in the morning to take him to a doctor's appointment. In the end, and Mark had told him that he had an air conditioner in his car and he didn't really have any gas to drive himself to the doctor's appointment, so he needed a ride from him. So Scott took him, picked him back up around 9. They hung out at his house for a little while, then they went back to when Scott took and back to Scott's house. And while they were at Scott's house, Shannon called Scott to ask for a ride. She said she couldn't get her car to start, and she wanted to know if he could give her a ride. When Mark asked him who was that, he told him. He said that he got up, went out of the room, and apparently made a phone call. They don't know who called. And when he came back, he told Scott that he needed to go home.
Now, several of the articles I read said that Shannon had been compiling a psychological profile on Mark.
No. This is... Yeah. Okay, but what really happened was Shannon was in a psychology class. Her sister Cheryl had gotten a psychological profile that belonged to Mark because she said she wanted to read it. And Mark told her, he's like, you can read it, but I don't want you to show it to anybody else. After you read it, burn it or give it back to me. Well, she wouldn't give it back to him. And when he asked for it back, when he asked if she still had it, she said, yes, he got mad. And he, you know, wanted it back. And as far as to Cheryl's knowledge, it was still at her house on the floor in her bedroom the day that Shannon was killed.
Oh, wow.
The only problem is that when they went to the house and they searched the Gregory's house, they never could find it.
Now, some of the reports I read said Mark and Shannon knew each other. And some of them said they were friends. Was it more like an acquaintance or...
No, they picked on him. They, even in this police affidavit, they talk about how that other people that knew them, like Cheryl talked about how that she was frightened of him, that he stared at her. She claimed that she didn't know his last name, but she had been to his house. But yes, she had a psychological report.
How did she get that?
He gave it to her because apparently both of them were like in psychology class.
Okay.
And so she wanted to read it. And so, anyway, she talked to the detectives and, you know, she told them that, you know, Mark frightened her. Anyway, she knew that where he lived. She gave him the address and everything. So they go to Mark's house. At this time, they don't know it's Mark Branch. They just know it's a Mark. They get there. They talk to his mother, answers the door. She tells him, you know, yeah, my son's Mark Branch. And they asked her, well, was he home? And she said, no, that, you know, last time she had seen him was about 10:30 and he was with this Scott Landry guy. And that she had left to go shopping and hadn't seen him since. So they decide they're going to go talk to Scott. And now the thing is before Scott's mother told him that his Chevette was, you know, in good working order. So, and his only excuse for not driving that day was he didn't have any gas. He didn't have any gas money. He didn't have gas, you know, whatever. So when they go to talk to, before they talk to Landry, before they talk to Scott Landry, they talk to the neighbor. And the neighbor said that about noon, he was fixing to watch television. He heard some car doors. And he looked out his window and he saw a dark gray Chevette parked, you know, facing the driveway. And he described, you know, that it was a 6 foot tall dude weighing about 180 to 195 pounds, dark hair. Said he had, you know, he was clean cut. Told him that he had on, you know, a jean jacket and stonewashed, you know, jeans. And he had his hands in his pockets. He didn't have any kind of, you know, outward weapons, anything like that. So he just sat back down and started, you know, watching his TV. And then he said about 3 or 5 minutes later, it wasn't, you know, just a very short amount of time, he heard the car door again, and he looks out, and the guy sitting back in the car, he heard the engine start, and, you know, the person leaves. He said then about 30 or 45 minutes later after that, he hears Cheryl pull up, and then the police show up. So, in about 3 or 4 minute period of time, he went in, stabbed her in the head and in the back, and it seems over 24 times.
Wow.
And then slashed her throat.
Do you think he might have been looking for Cheryl and got the wrong twin?
I don't think they were identical.
Okay.
The way this is put, the way this makes it out, I don't think they were identical. I don't know that, though. I haven't seen a picture of Cheryl. I've only seen a picture of Shannon, so I don't know. I just know they were twins. They showed the neighbor a picture of Mark Branch, which, you know, was a recent picture with his recent hair and everything. And the guy said that was him. So by about 5:30, the state trooper's office went and they met with Scott Landry and his dad. And he told him that, you know, that Mark could be with him until about 11:30 that morning. Like I said, you know, while he was there at his house, he got a phone call from Shannon, and she was crying, saying she couldn't get her car started. And he told her, you know, well, call your boyfriend. She said, I can't. He's at school, and they won't let him take phone calls from me. And then he said, well, if you still can't get it started, call me back. You know, we'll see what we can do. And then let's see. And then he said that Mark asked him, you know, who had called. He told him that, you know, it had been Shannon and that she was unable to start her car. And then that's when Scott told him that nobody was at home with her, that she was there by herself. And then Mark said he needed to go home because he needed to pick up his check at his work. And that was the last time that, you know, when Scott dropped him off, that was the last time that he saw him. And the thing is Mark left his jacket in Scott's car, in his truck. But the guy who saw him at the girl's house, at Shannon's house, said he had on a jacket. And so, but Scott has got an alibi because his girlfriend, Amy, showed up to his house about 12:30. And he said that, you know, he went home and took a nap, you know, between 11:30 and 12:30, and then his girlfriend showed up. He said then his mother called him and told him that either Cheryl or Shannon or Sharon had committed suicide. That was the story that was going around at that point.
Oh, wow.
So he goes down to the school and he finds Sharon's boyfriend and he tells him that, you know, one of the twins had committed suicide, but he didn't know which one. And, so they go to their house to try and figure out what happened. Now, here's where things get interesting. So Scott starts telling the troopers that Mark would wonder at times about how it would feel to kill somebody. He also said that he religiously taped and watched horror flicks, and it's in this report that it's smut. He named Friday the 13th and Halloween specifically. He said that Mark liked to pattern his own life on characters from Jason, Friday the 13th, and the Freddy movies. He also told him that he owned 7 hockey masks, which I don't know why that's a big deal. But he said that he also said that they made a big deal out of the fact that he owned combat boots and shirts that were worn by the main characters in the horror movies.
Okay. That, just thinking about that, combat boots, a lot of people own combat boots, and I'm just curious as to what kind of shirts. I mean, Jason wore work shirts. Michael wore, you know, coveralls. These are actually fairly common articles of clothing. The only slasher that really had a distinctive outfit, I guess you would say, would be Freddy with the striped sweater. You know, the other guys literally wore work clothes.
Well, the thing that gets me is the fact that, like, pretty much everything that they have based this on because is off of this one kid. Because he goes on to say that he had hung out with Mark since third or fourth grade. And he starts talking about how that Mark had attended school for troubled kids, that Mark's mom had told Scott that at one point Mark had tried to attempt suicide. He also said that Mark had been at the Belmont State Hospital for a year when he was about 16 or 17. And that he also went to school in Northampton for school for young people who had mental or emotional difficulties.
So this is almost, it sounds a lot like the West Memphis 3.
So, of course, they call the Center for Children and Family Services, and they find out that, you know, Mark had gone to school there, and he had graduated from there. But then Scott tells them that Sharon and Cheryl Gregory both mocked Scott and made fun of him to his face, and that within the last week, Mark had said to Scott that the two girls had pissed him off. And this is another thing too that is not in the that was not in any of the newspaper articles or anything that I read. Sharon Gregory had taken pictures of Mark Branch, and they don't say what the pictures were, but Mark wanted the pictures back really bad. And the police found 2 pictures of Mark under a box in her room.
Was he nude or anything?
Don't know.
Okay.
I mean, they found the 2 pictures. They don't describe what the 2 pictures were or why he wanted them back. They don't say why he wanted them back so bad that he just wanted these pictures back. They interviewed Scott's girlfriend, and of course she said that she had gone to his house, and she said that she knew Mark Branch, and that, you know, he was an admirer of the movie Friday the 13th and of its character Jason. And then she told the detective that Scott and Mark would both watch violent movies, such as Friday the 13th, and that Mark talked about living out a fantasy of being Jason. She also said that Mark had shown her items he had purchased in the mail about Jason from those movies, and that he had dolls, hockey masks, and videotapes. Now, remember, this is all, like, evidence that they're using to get a search warrant. And, sorry. I'm just trying to make sure I'm getting it all right.
Well, you mentioned the thing about gathering evidence for a search warrant or something like that. Years ago, when I was in high school, Columbine happened. And several of my friends and I all got sent home because somebody thought they heard us talking about planning a school shooting. We weren't. We were clear. But while I was sent home, my dad came into my room and told me I needed to get rid of things. I had Crow posters, a lot of Stephen King, a lot of horror movies and stuff. And he said, you don't know if the cops will come here and look at all this, and this could all be evidence. So I got Clockwork Orange posters, things like that. I had to throw like a lot of stuff away. I saved the movies and the albums. I hid them in my dad's workshop. But a lot of posters and stuff did go in the trash can. So I know kind of what they're talking about firsthand.
Yeah, well, they also talk about here the chief, when he was writing this out, he writes this paragraph, and he says, "I'm familiar both personally and from discussions with Sergeant Paramba with the series of movies beginning with Friday the 13th. They revolve around a character named Jason. Jason was a person who was himself indestructible. He brutally killed people with knives, axes, swords, and similar implements, often causing multiple stab wounds." Now, he puts this paragraph in before he goes on to talk about what the medical examiner told him. And the medical examiner's first impression was that it was a single-edged knife with a blade of approximately 1 1/2 inches.
So a pocket knife.
With a width of 1 1/2 inches.
Okay.
And a blade the length of between 4 and 5 inches.
Okay.
Death resulted from multiple stab wounds numbering about 24. And let's see. Yeah, they just talk about how that she was born in 1970. They talk about when the car was found. They found the car the next day on October 25th. They got a telephone call at 8:20 a.m. So this was like, you know, between 12:30 and 8:20 the next morning, they found the car. And she, you know, this lady called in, told them where the car was, you know, parked. They go out there to the area. They found the car. They secured it. They got a telephone call. He said that he had interviewed people that lived in the area. They said that when they left their house at like 11:45 on the 24th, the car wasn't there. And when they came back at 1:45, let's see. Yeah, when he came back at 1:45, the car was there, and it was parked off, you know, the road. And when nobody came to get it, that he called the police the next morning. Now, this affidavit was written before they found the body. Okay? They specifically put in here, police officers have searched the woods near the vehicle but have not found its operator.
Okay.
They also state, based upon my observations of the deceased at the scene and the amount of blood between the first floor and the bathroom where she was found, I have cause to believe, based upon my many years' experience in investigating crimes of violence, that the clothing of the deceased attacker is likely to have the deceased's blood on it. Furthermore, a shoe print was identified in the blood on the bathroom floor. Now, when they go to search the car, because they've already searched the car by this point, okay? When they go to search the car, they found that the car had the vehicle, this is the search warrant was issued. The vehicle was towed to Massachusetts State Police Barracks, where it was searched by police officers there, and a chemist from the crime scene laboratory found blood and on the accelerator and the brake pedals, the steering wheel, the automatic shift lever, emergency brake lever, the driver's side outside door handle, and the inside handle, the carpeting on the driver's side in the front, and the plastic console housing the shifter. So, now, here's the thing. They put that where they talked about, you know, what the clothing would look like.
Mm-hmm.
That's about four paragraphs ahead of where they put it, or where they talk about what they found in the car.
Right.
In between there is when they start talking about the psychological profile, which it doesn't make any sense why they wrote it out that way. But this supposedly is why, in all of the news articles and everything else, you always hear about this psychological profile. It says that Detective Clark spoke with Cheryl Gregory on October 25th, and she told them that back in August, that Cheryl was at Scott's house, and she was hanging out with Scott and Mark. Now, here's another thing. She's been to Mark's house. She's hung out with Scott she's been to Mark's house. She's hung out with Mark at Scott's house. Mark had some papers, and he told them that it was a psychological profile that had been done on him. When Cheryl asked to see it and look it over, and she asked him, could she take it home and read it? Mark said that was okay, but he didn't want anyone else to see it, and that she needed to burn it when she finished reading it. Then Cheryl took it home and she cut Mark's name out of it.
What?
Yeah. This is what she told the police. She cut Mark's name out of it. Now this was back in August. So on Saturday, October 22nd, which is, 2 days before her sister's killed, Sharon got a phone call from Scott asking if Cheryl still had the psychological profile. When Sharon went and asked Cheryl, Cheryl told her that it was on her bedroom floor, and Sharon told her that, yeah, Cheryl still had it, and Scott said Mark wanted it back. When Cheryl told the detective that she remembered that the profile had been on her floor 3 days prior to October 24th. So when they went to go look for it, they couldn't find it. They ransacked the house, looked everywhere, and they couldn't find it. Nor did they find it in his car or on him. This psychological profile, they didn't find any evidence of anything being burned, or he might have set it on fire. There's no evidence of this psychological profile.
It's just gone.
Yeah, it's gone. Then she also tells them that she had a conversation with Mark, and he bragged about having 12 different masks that he had sent away for, and he told her that the Halloween prior, he had dressed up as Jason, and that he had gone up to the Greenfield Middle School, and he had jumped out of the bushes with a knife and chased a girl. When the girl ran off, he tripped and fell, and he told her that if he hadn't fallen, he would have stabbed her. He told her that because he was unsuccessful last year, that he was going to be trying to do that again this Halloween. Now, so you've got a girl that's been murdered. Halloween's coming up in a few days. You've got these two people, you've got these three people that have basically, told the police that he was obsessed with horror movies, that he talked about wanting to kill people, all this kind of shit. And then you got this girl who, for some reason, never went to police about this conversation that she had had with him, that he had tried to stab somebody.
And nobody had filed a police report the year previous that they were chased by a guy with a knife.
No.
I mean, I realize it's Halloween, but I don't care if it's Halloween. If I'm walking somewhere and somebody jumps out as Jason, at first I don't think it's a Halloween prank. But once the knife is not fake, once I realize that, if I get away from them, yeah, I'm going to go to the police.
The thing is, in all reality, if somebody jumps out at you, especially if you're a girl, you're a little girl, you're going to run.
Yeah.
So you don't even have a chance to look and see if they even have a knife. You just run off.
True.
And he fell. So you know, he falls. She gets a good bit of ways away, realizes nobody's behind her, just thinks it's a stupid prank.
Okay.
I'm not saying he did it. I'm not saying he didn't do it. I'm just saying, like, there's a reason why, you know, there's not a police report made or whatever. But anyway, also, Scott Landry told that Mark Branch collected all sorts of knives. So far, if I could change Mark's name with your name, you would be like SOL buddy. I mean, that's what kind of bothered me about this. But anyway, when, of course, you know, they start talking about the car, everything they found in the car, and then they went to the Stop and Shop. Now, if you're intending on killing somebody, you know you're going to need money to get away. Wouldn't you stop and get your paycheck?
Yeah.
Okay, he never stopped and picked up his paycheck. He was supposed to come into work on the 26th, and he never showed up for that. Of course, by this point, everybody was looking for him. They're describing the house that, you know, she lived in. And then this is how they summarize it. This is based on this information. There's probable cause to believe that Mark Branch brutally killed Sharon Gregory with a knife or other sharp instrument, and that the killing was modeled on the killings in movies such as Friday the 13th. There's also a probable cause to believe that Mark Branch keeps copies of such movies and collects paraphernalia such as hockey masks and boots used by killers in these movies, as well as a doll of Jason from the movie Friday the 13th. A search warrant is therefore sought for the premise and for his house. And what they were looking for, because, you know, they had to lay out what they're looking for. They were looking for videotapes, paraphernalia, souvenirs from horror films such as Friday the 13th and Halloween, and characters of those films such as Jason and Freddy Krueger. The souvenirs and paraphernalia would include hockey masks, dolls, knives, and sharp instruments, and combat boots. Also, or sought any documents showing possession or control of by Mark Branch for these items. And that, now, and that's the one that I could actually find that was, you know, that they had, you know, done. Mm-hmm. My problem with all this is there's other things that I read. What happened was, when they couldn't find him on the 25th, they found his car. They went out and they supposedly searched the woods. Nobody could, you know, find the, nobody could find him. The police decided that, because, you know, all this hearsay from everybody, that they effectively were going to shut down Halloween that year. So they canceled trick-or-treating. Well, they said they could trick-or-treat during the daytime.
Yeah.
Because it was on a Sunday. So they told everybody they could trick-or-treat on the daytime. There was one Halloween thing that was put on at the armory there that night. But everybody had to have their parents with them. They also, basically the whole town was like in fear of this kid.
This is one guy.
Yeah, one guy. And other people who talked to the media. And also, this is another thing that the chief said that was creepy as shit. He said, he was quoted as saying that they would not find this kid's body until deer hunting season opened up, and then the hunters would find him.
I read that.
Okay, this is before, and this is when they still think supposedly that he's alive, and they're looking all over the country for him, and they're going up into these other states and stuff. They were even looking into New York and all that, supposedly there, looking for this kid.
There had been sightings of him.
Yeah, supposedly there was sightings of this kid, and then they find him November 9th. They find him hanging from a tree.
I thought it was November 29th.
Maybe it was November 20th. It was in November. They find him damn near a month later, something like that. Hanging from a tree. And people in the town even said that they... And the thing is, his the autopsy report said they had put on there that tentatively suicide. So they weren't even, like, they even themselves were thinking that this kid had been strung up by some people. And, you know, that he could have been murdered.
Right.
And then there was people in the town that said that, you know, some people helped him commit suicide.
Do they have any suspects or who might?
No. Once they found his body, that was it. They didn't look at anything. And the thing of it is the fact that, you know, the evidence they have against him, I know they found blood and stuff in his car, but we all know from watching Forensic Files, or, I mean, just from watching TV, that kind of stuff, finding blood on a brake pedal and on a gas pedal, on a door handle, that's not, I mean, there's no DNA testing done to make sure it was her blood. And when the guy saw him leave, he wasn't drenched in blood. And you've got to think, if you stab somebody 24 times and you slit their throat,
yeah,
you're going to be covered in fucking blood.
I wonder if they found an instrument on him.
No.
On his body.
They never found the, they never found the knife. They never found it. And it's, from the way that, like, when they talked about it, his body was, like, so decomposed and stuff. I mean, like, when there was other, you know, news organizations that wanted information about Branch released.
Mm-hmm.
And his family was like, no, it's not fair. He's dead. Just leave it alone. And the judges were like, you know, at first the judge wanted to take and stop this information from coming out, especially the stuff about him being mentally ill and all that. And then, you know, the judge, once he, you know, was like, you know, didn't take him long. He came back and was like, yeah, sure, just release everything. So, this kid seriously was, like, vilified from the get-go. And like I said, I don't know if he did it. We'll never know what happened.
No.
But it's the whole idea that this entire town, because of this kid, you know, he was suspect number one. And because he listened, or because of the fact they never looked at anybody else. All because of the fact that some people told them that he was into horror movies. And another thing, too, that gets me is the fact that there's a lot of people. There are a lot of people that were from that area that talked about how that they didn't find his body when they went out and searched. And they did, like, a huge search.
Yeah.
I mean, they looked all over the place. A huge search. They didn't find his body. And then a lot of people thought that the news coverage of it is what caused him to kill himself. But what I think is odd is the fact that they didn't find him. His car was out there from one at least by 1:45 that afternoon. And so he was out there in those woods.
Mm-hmm.
And when the coroner come back and told them that he had been dead since the day of the murder.
Right.
So, you know, where'd all these sightings come from? Why did they make these comments about how, oh, deer hunters will find his body? You know, I mean, like,
and from what I understand, he was only like 200 yards from his car or something like that.
He wasn't very far in the woods,
yeah.
No. And, you know, he was hanging from a tree. And he was hung up by his belt and his shoelaces.
I didn't read that.
Yes, he was hung up by his belt and his shoelaces. His belt and his shoelaces hung him.
Hmm.
I mean, like, I just wonder how you maneuver that.
Yeah, I mean, I know that sometimes the way people hang themselves in jail is they'll tie it around their neck and then they'll sit down.
Yeah, but he was hanging.
Right.
From a limb, like a high up limb. Like, they talked about, you know, how he was, like, high up in the tree.
Hmm.
So, I mean, like, was he standing on one branch and then just, like, I mean, like, how do you have your shoelaces be long enough
to hold
that much weight?
Yeah.
You got a guy who weighs in between 180 to 195 pounds.
Because mm-hmm. I've broken shoelaces pulling on them too hard, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. But that was, I saw that one and it reminded me of, you know, just a lot of people that I grew up with. And like I said, you know, I feel for the Gregories, regardless, they lost a child. But it's just, I want to know, like, I need to know, like, the truth. Right. I need something concrete. That's like, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, that was the Friday the 13th murders. Next week, I'll be taking the lead. We'll be talking about Chris Benoit and what happened there.
Yes. Also, if you want to get in touch with us, if you want to take in, give us some feedback, if you want to tell us that we suck, whatever, just, you know, email us at askwickedwednesday@yahoo.com, or you can message us on Facebook or leave a comment on our Facebook page. We really want to hear from people. We want ideas. Because there's so much stuff out there to cover, so we'd really love for people to tell us what they want to hear about so we can look into it. And as always, thank you for listening, and we'll get back with you next week.
See ya.